She's just working things out in her own way. She'll grow out of Tika T in time. And she did. Where had I been that I didn't know about imaginary friends? I could see the point of it. How a lost part of yourself steps out and reminds you who you could be with a little work. It doesn't sound like me and my mother were anything alike, I said. Oh, but you were. She had a streak in her like you do. Suddenly she would up and do something other girls wouldn't dream of. Like what? August stared over my shoulder and smiled. One time she ran away from home. I can't even remember what she was upset about. We looked for her long past dark, found her curled up in a drainage ditch, sound asleep. The dog had started barking again, and August grew quiet. We listened like it was some kind of serenade, while I sat with my eyes closed, trying to picture my mother asleep in a ditch. After a while, I said, "How long did you work for my grandmother?" A good long time, over 9 years, until I got that teaching job I told you about. We still kept up after I left, though. I bet they hated it when you moved down here to South Carolina. Poor Deborah cried and cried. She was 19 by then, but she cried like she was 6. The swing had slowed to a stop, and neither one of us thought to rev it back up. How did my mother get down here? I'd been here 2 years, August said. Had started my honey business, and June was teaching school, when I got a long-distance phone call from her. She was crying her eyes out, saying her mother had died. I don't have anybody left but you, she kept saying. What about her father? Where was he? Oh, Mr. Fontenelle died when she was a baby. I never even met him. So she moved down here to be with you? Deborah had a friend from high school who just moved to Sylvan. She was the one who convinced Deborah it was a good place to be. Told her there were jobs and men back from the war. So Deborah moved. I think it was a lot because of me, though. I think she wanted me nearby. The dots were all starting to connect. My mother came to Sylvan, I said. Met T-Ray and got married. That's right, August said. When we'd first come out onto the porch, the sky had been clotted with stars, the Milky Way shining like an actual road you could walk down and find your mother standing at the end of with her hands on her hips. But now a damp fog rolled into the yard and settled over the porch. A minute later, a light rain fell out of it. I said, "The part I will never figure out is why she married him." "I don't think your father was always like he is now. Deborah told me about him. She loved the fact he was decorated in the war. He was so brave, she thought. Said he treated her like a princess." I could have laughed in her face. This isn't the same Terence Ray, I can tell you that right now. You know, Lily, people can start out one way, and by the time life gets through with them, they end up completely different. I don't doubt he started off loving your mother. In fact, I think he worshipped her. And your mother soaked it up. Like a lot of young women, she could get carried away with romance. But after 6 months or so, it started wearing off. One of her letters talked about Terence Ray having dirt under his fingernails. I remember that. Next thing I knew, she was writing me how she didn't know if she could live way out on a farm, that kind of thing. When he proposed, she said no. But she married him, I said, genuinely confused. Later on, she changed her mind and said yes. Why? I said. If the love had worn off, why'd she marry him? August cupped her hand on the back of my head and smoothed my hair with her fingers. I thought hard about whether I should tell you, but maybe it'll help you understand everything that happened a lot better. Honey, Deborah was pregnant. That's why. The instant before she said it, I knew what was coming, but still her words fell like a hammer. She was pregnant with me? My voice sounded tired saying the words. My mother's life was too heavy for me. That's right. Pregnant with you. She and Terence Ray got married around Christmas time. She called long distance to tell me. Unwanted, I thought. I was an unwanted baby. Not only that, my mother had gotten stuck with T-Ray because of me. I was glad it was dark so August couldn't see my face, how bent in it was. You think you want to know something, and then once you do, all you can think about is erasing it from your mind. From now on, when people ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I plan to say, amnesiac. I listened to the hiss of rain. The spray floated over and misted my cheeks while I counted on my fingers. I was born 7 months after they got married. She called me right after you were born. She said you were so pretty it hurt her eyes to look at you. Something about this caused my own eyes to sting like sand had flown into them. Maybe my mother had cooed over me after all, made embarrassing baby talk, twirled my newborn hair like the top of an ice cream cone, done it up with pink bows. Just because she didn't plan on having me didn't mean she hadn't loved me. August went on talking while I leaned back into the familiar story I'd always told myself, the one about my mother loving me beyond reason. I'd lived inside it the way a goldfish lives in its bowl, as if that was the only world there was. Leaving it would be the death of me. I sat there with my shoulders slumped, staring at the floor. I would not think the word unwanted. "Are you all right?" August said. "You want to go to bed now and sleep on all this? Talk about the rest in the morning?" "No," burst out of my lips. I took a breath. "I'm fine, really," I said, trying to sound unruffled. "I just need some more water." She took my empty glass and went to the kitchen, looking back twice at me. When she returned with the water, she had a red umbrella hooked over her wrist. "In a little while, I'll walk you over to the honey house," she said. As I drank, the glass shook in my hand and the water would hardly go down. The sound of swallowing in my throat grew so loud it blotted out the rain for several seconds. "Are you sure you don't want to go to bed now?" August asked. "I'm sure. I need to know." "You need to know what, Lily?" "Everything," I said. August settled herself beside me on the swing, resigned. "All right, then," she said. "All right." "I know she only married him because of me, but do you think she was just a little bit happy?" I asked. "I think for a while she was. She tried, I know that." I got a dozen or so letters, and at least that many phone calls from her, spread out over the first couple of years. And I could see she was making an effort. Mostly she wrote about you, how you were sitting up, taking your first steps, playing patty cake. But then her letters came less and less often, and when they did come, I could tell she was unhappy. One day she called me up. It was the end of August or first of September. I remember because we'd had Mary Day not long before that. She said she was leaving T-Ray. That she had to leave home. She wanted to know if she could stay with us here for a few months till she figured out where to go. "Of course," I said, "that would be fine." When I picked her up at the bus station, she didn't even look like herself. She had gotten so thin and had these dark circles under her eyes. My stomach did a slow roll. I knew we'd come to the place in the story I feared the most. I began to breathe very fast. "I was with her when you picked her up at the bus station. She brought me along, didn't she?" August leaned over and whispered against my hair. "No, honey, she came by herself." I realized I'd bitten the skin inside my cheek. The taste of blood made me want to spit, but I swallowed it instead. "Why?" I said. "Why didn't she bring me?" "All I know, Lily, is that she was depressed, kind of fallen apart. The day she left home, nothing unusual happened. She just woke up and decided she couldn't be there anymore. She called the lady from the next farm to babysit, and she drove Terence Ray's truck to the bus station. Up until she got here, I thought she'd be bringing you with her. The swing groaned while we sat there smelling warm rain, wet wood, rotted grass. My mother had left me.
"I hate her," I said.
I meant to shout it, but it came out unnaturally calm, low and raspy like the sound of cars crunching slowly over gravel. "Now hold on, Lily."
"I do. I hate her. She wasn't anything like I thought she was."
I'd spent my life imagining all the ways she'd loved me, what a perfect specimen of a mother she was, and all of it was lies. I had completely made her up.
"It was easy for her to leave me because she never wanted me in the first place," I said.
August reached for me, but I got to my feet and pushed open the screen door leading to the porch steps. I let it slam behind me, then sat on the rain-sopped steps, hunched up under the eave. I heard August move across the porch, felt the air thicken as she stood behind me on the other side of the screen.
"I'm not going to make excuses for her, Lily," she said. "Your mother did what she did."
"Some mother," I said. I felt hard inside, hard and angry.
"Will you listen to me for a minute? When your mother got here to Tiburon, she was practically skin and bone. May couldn't get her to eat a thing. All she did was cry for a week. Later on, we called it a nervous breakdown, but while it was happening, we didn't know what to call it. I took her to a doctor here, and he gave her some cod liver oil and asked her where her white family was. He said maybe she needed to spend some time on Bull Street, so I didn't take her back to him again."
Bull Street, the mental institution? The story was getting worse by the minute.
"But that's for crazy people," I said. I guess he didn't know what else to do for her, but she wasn't crazy. She was depressed, but not crazy.
"You should have let him put her in there. I wish she'd rotted in there."
"Lily!"
I'd shocked her, and I was glad. My mother had been looking for love, and instead she'd found T-Ray in the farm, and then me, and I had not been enough for her. She left me with T-Ray Owens. The sky was split by a zigzagged path of lightning, but even then I didn't move. My hair blew like smoke in every direction. I felt my eyes harden, grow flat and narrow as pennies. I stared at a dollop of birdshit on the bottom step, the way the rain was smearing it into the crevices of the wood.
"Are you listening now?" August said. Her voice sifted through the screen, little barbed wire tips on every word. "Are you?"
"I hear you."
"Depressed people do things they wouldn't ordinarily do."
"Like what?" I said.
"Abandon their children?"
I couldn't stop. The rain spattered my sandals, dripped between my toes. Letting out a loud breath, August walked back to the swing and sat down. It seemed like maybe I'd hurt her, disappointed her, and something about that punched a hole in me. Some of my pridefulness drained out. I eased off the steps and went back inside, onto the screen porch. As I sat down beside her on the swing, she laid her hand on mine, and the heat flowed out from her palm into my skin. I shuddered.
"Come here," she said, pulling me over to her.
It was like being swept under a bird's wing, and that's how we stayed for a while, rocking back and forth with me tucked under there.
"What made her so depressed like that?" I said. "I don't know the whole answer, but part of it was her being out on the farm, isolated from things, married to a man she really didn't want to be married to."
The rain picked up, coming down in large silver-black sheets. I tried, but I couldn't make heads or tails of my heart. One minute I hated my mother. The next I felt sorry for her.
Okay, she was having a nervous breakdown, but how could she leave me behind like that? I said. After she'd been here 3 months and was feeling a little better, she started talking about how much she missed you. Finally, she went back to Sylvan to get you. I sat up and looked at August, hearing the quick suck of air through my lips. She came back to get me? She planned to bring you here to Tiburon to live. She even talked to Clayton about filing divorce papers. The last time I saw her, she was on a bus, waving at me through the window. I leaned my head on August's shoulder and knew exactly what had happened next. I closed my eyes and there it was. The long-gone day that would never leave. The suitcase on the floor. How she'd tossed clothes into it without folding them. Hurry, she'd kept saying. T-Ray had told me she came back for her things. But she'd come back for me, too. She'd wanted to bring me here. To Tiburon. To August's. If only we'd made it. I remembered the sound of T-Ray's boots on the stairs. I wanted to pound my fists against something, to scream at my mother for getting caught, for not packing faster, for not coming sooner. At last I looked up at August. When I spoke, my mouth tasted bitter. I remember it. I remember her coming back for me. I wondered about that, she said. T-Ray found her packing. They were yelling and fighting. I stopped, hearing their voices in my head. Go on, August said. I looked down at my hands. They were trembling. She grabbed a gun from inside the closet, but he took it away from her. It happened so fast it gets mixed up in my brain. I saw the gun on the floor and I picked it up. I don't know why I did that. I wanted to help, to give it back to her. Why did I do that? Why did I pick it up? August slid out to the edge of the swing and turned to face me. Her eyes were determined looking. Do you remember what happened next, after you picked it up? I shook my head. Only the noise. The explosion. So loud. The chains on the swing twitched. I looked over and saw August frowning. How did you find out about my mother dying? I said. When Deborah didn't come back like she said. Well, I had to know what happened, so I called your house. A woman answered, said she was a neighbor. A neighbor of ours told you? I asked. She said Deborah had been killed in an accident with a gun. That's all she would say. I turned and looked out at the night, at dripping tree limbs, at shadows moving on the half-lit porch. You didn't know that I was the one who did it? No, I never imagined such a thing, she said. I'm not sure I can imagine it now. She laced her fingers together, then laid them in her lap. I tried to find out more. I called back again and Terence Ray answered, but he wouldn't talk about it. He kept wanting to know who I was. I even called the police station in Sylvan, but they wouldn't give out any information either, just said it was an accidental death. So I've had to live with not knowing all these years. We sat in the stillness. The rain had nearly stopped. Leaving us with all this quiet and a sky with no moon. Come on, August said. Let's get you in bed. We walked into the night, into the blurring song of katydids, the thud splat of raindrops on the umbrella, all those terrible rhythms that take up inside when you let your guard down. Left you, they drummed. Left you, left you. Knowing can be a curse on a person's life. I'd traded in a pack of lies for a pack of truth, and I didn't know which one was heavier. Which one took the most strength to carry around? It was a ridiculous question, though, because once you know the truth, You can't ever go back and pick up your suitcase of lies. Heavier or not, the truth is yours now. In the honey house, August waited till I crawled under the sheets, then bent over and kissed my forehead. Every person on the face of the earth makes mistakes, Lily. Every last one. We're all so human. Your mother made a terrible mistake, but she tried to fix it. Good night, I said, and rolled onto my side. There's nothing perfect, August said from the doorway. There's only life. A worker bee is just over a centimeter long and weighs only about 60 milligrams. Nevertheless, she can fly with a load heavier than herself. The honeybee. Chapter 13. Heat collected in the creases of my elbows, in the soft places behind my knees. Lying on top of the sheets, I touched my eyelids. I'd cried so much they were puffed out and half shut. If it hadn't been for my eyelids, I might not have believed any of the things that had passed between me and August. I hadn't moved since August left, only lay there staring at the flat surface of the wall, at the array of night bugs that wander out and crawl around for fun after they think you're asleep. When I grew tired of watching them, I placed my arm across my eyes and told myself, "Sleep, Lily. Please just go to sleep." But of course I couldn't. I sat up, feeling like my body weighed 200 pounds, like somebody had backed the cement truck up to the honey house, swung the pipe over to my chest, and started pouring. I hated feeling like a concrete block in the middle of the night. More than once, while staring at the wall, I thought of Our Lady. I wanted to talk to her, to say, "Where do I go from here?" But when I'd seen her earlier, when August and I had first come in, she didn't look like she could be of service to anybody, bound up with all that chain around her. You want the one you're praying to at least to look capable. I dragged myself out of bed and went to see her anyway. I decided that even Mary did not need to be 100% capable all the time. The only thing I wanted was for her to understand. Somebody to let out a big sigh and say, "You poor thing, I know how you feel." Given a choice, I preferred someone to understand my situation, even though she was helpless to fix it, rather than the other way around. But that's just me. Right off, I smelled the chain, its thick, rusty odor. I had the urge to unwrap her, but of course that would have ruined the whole reenactment August and the daughters had going. The red candle flickered at Mary's feet. I plopped onto the floor and sat cross-legged in front of her. Outside, I heard a wind high in the trees. A sing-song voice that carried me back to long-ago times when I would wake in the night to the same sound and, muddled with sleep and wanting, would imagine it was my mother out there among the trees, singing her bottomless love. Once I flew into T-Ray's room, yelling she was outside my window. He said three words. "Holy crap, Lily." I hated when he was right. There had never been any voice in the wind. No mother out there singing. No bottomless love. The terrible thing, the really terrible thing, was all the anger in me. It had started on the back porch when the story of my mother had collapsed, like the ground under my feet giving way. I didn't want to be angry. I told myself, "You're not angry. You don't have any right to be angry. What you did to your mother is a lot worse than what she did to you." But you can't talk yourself out of anger. Either you're angry or you're not. The room was hot and still. In another minute I would not be able to breathe for the anger filling me up. My lungs went out only so far before they struck against it and closed back in. I got to my feet and paced in the darkness. Behind me on the work table, a half dozen jars of black Madonna honey waited for Zack to deliver them somewhere in town. To Clayton's, maybe. To the Frogmore Stew General Store, the Amen Dollar, or Divine Dew's, the color beauty parlor. How dare she? How dare she leave me? I was her child. I looked toward the window, wanting to smash the panes out of it. I wanted to throw something all the way to heaven and knock God clean off his throne. I picked up one of the honey jars and hurled it as hard as I could. It missed Black Mary's head by inches and smashed against the back wall. I picked up another one and threw it, too. It crashed on the floor beside a stack of supers. I threw every last jar on the table until honey was spattered everywhere, flung like cake batter from electric beaters. I stood in a gooey room full of broken glass, and I didn't care. My mother had left me. Who cared about honey on the walls? I grabbed a tin bucket next, and letting out a grunt, threw it with so much force it left a dent in the wall. My throwing arm was nearly worn out, but I picked up a tray of candle molds and flung that too. Then I stood still, watching the honey slide along the wall toward the floor. A trickle of bright blood wound down my left arm. I had no idea how it had gotten there. My heart beat wildly. I felt like I'd unzipped my skin and momentarily stepped out of it, leaving a crazy person in charge. The room turned like a carousel, with my stomach gliding up and down. I felt the need to touch the wall with both hands to make it still again. I walked back toward the table where the honey jars had been and braced my hands against it. I couldn't think what to do. I felt a powerful sadness, not because of what I'd done, as bad as that was, but because everything seemed emptied out. The feelings I'd had for her, the things I'd believed, all those stories about her I'd lived off of like they were food and water and air. Because I was the girl she'd left behind, that's what it came down to. Looking around at the wreck I'd made, I wondered if someone in the pink house might have heard the honey jars hit the wall. I went to the window and stared across the gloom in the yard. The panes in August's bedroom window were dark. I felt my heart in my chest. It hurt so badly, like it had been stepped on. "How come you left me?" I whispered, watching my breath make a circle of fog on the glass. I stayed pressed against the window for a while, then went and cleared off a few pieces of glass from the floor in front of Our Lady. I lay down on my side, drawing my knees toward my chin. Above me, Black Mary was flecked with honey and seemed not at all surprised. I lay in the emptiness, in the tiredness, with everything, even the hating, drained out. There was nothing left to do, no place to go, just right here, right now, where the truth was. I told myself not to get up in the night and walk across the floor unless I wanted to cut my feet to smithereens. Then I closed my eyes and began to piece together the dream I wanted myself to have. How a little door in the Black Mary statue would open up, just over her abdomen, and I would crawl inside to a hidden room. This was not all my imagination, as I had glimpsed an actual picture of this in August's book. A statue of Mary, with a wide-open door, and inside, all these people tucked away in the secret world of consolation. I woke to Rosaline's big hands shaking me, and opened my eyes to a terrible brightness. Her face was bent over mine, the scent of coffee and grape jelly coming from her mouth.
"Lily," she yelled, "what in the Sam Hill happened in here?"
I'd forgotten there would be dried blood caked across my arm. I looked at it, at a piece of glass, small as a stub of diamond, burrowed in a puckered setting of skin. Around me, jagged pieces of jars and puddles of honey, blood dotted the floor. Rosaline stared at me, waiting, bewildered looking. I stared back, trying to make her face come into focus. Sunlight slanted across Our Lady and fell down around us.
"Answer me," Rosaline said.
I squinted in the light. My mouth couldn't seem to open up and speak.
"Look at you. You've been bleeding."
My head nodded, bobbed around on my neck. I looked at the wrecked room. I felt embarrassed, ridiculous, stupid. I threw some jars of honey.
You made this mess? She said, like she couldn't quite believe it, like what she'd expected me to say was that a roving band of house wreckers had come through during the night. She blew a puff of air over her face, so forceful it lifted her hair, which was not easy to do considering the amount of lacquer she kept smeared on it.
Lord God in heaven, she said.
I got to my feet, waiting for her to bawl me out, but she took her thick fingers and struggled to pluck the piece of glass from my arm.
You need some mercurochrome on this before you get infected, she told me. Come on.
She sounded exasperated, like she wanted to take me by the shoulders and shake me till my teeth fell out. I sat on the side of the tub while Rosaline dabbed my arm with a stinging icy swab. She plastered a band-aid across it and said,
There, you won't die from blood poisoning at least.
She closed the medicine cabinet over the sink, then shut the bathroom door. I watched her take a seat on the commode, how her belly dropped down between her legs. When Rosaline sat on a toilet, the whole thing disappeared under her. I perched on the side of the tub and thought how glad I was August and June were still in their rooms.
All right, she said. Why did you throw all that honey?
I looked at the row of seashells on the window ledge, knowing how truly they belonged here, even though we were 100 miles from the ocean. August had said everybody needed a seashell in her bathroom to remind her the ocean was her home. Seashells, she'd said, are our lady's favorite items, next to the moon. I went over and picked up one of the shells, a pretty white one, flat with yellow around the edges. Rosaline sat there watching me.
Any time now, she said.
T-Ray was right about my mother, I said, hearing myself say the words, feeling sickened by them. She left me. It was just like he said it was. She left me. For a second, the anger I'd felt the night before flared up, and it crossed my mind to slam the shell against the tub, but I took a breath instead. Throwing fits wasn't that satisfying, I'd found out. Rosaline shifted her weight, and the toilet lid squeaked and slid around on top of the seat. She raked her fingers over the top of her head. I looked away at the pipe under the sink, at a smudge of rust on the linoleum.
So your mother did leave after all, she said. Lord, I was afraid of that.
I lifted my head. I remembered that first night after we ran away down by the creek, when I'd told Rosaline what T-Ray had said. I'd wanted her to laugh at the very idea of my mother leaving me, but she'd hesitated. You knew already, didn't you? I said.
I didn't know for sure, she said. I just heard things.
What things? She let out a sigh, really something more than a sigh.
After your mama died, she said. I heard T-Ray on the phone talking to that neighbor lady, Mrs. Watson. He was telling her he didn't need her to watch after you, that he got one of the pickers out of the orchard. He was talking about me, so I listened.
Outside the window, a crow flew past, filling the bathroom with a frantic caw, caw, and Rosaline stopped, waiting for it to die down. I knew Mrs. Watson from church, from all the times she stopped to buy peaches from me. She was kind as she could be, but she'd always looked at me like there was something indescribably sad written across my forehead, like she wanted to come over and scrub it off. I clutched the side of the tub as Rosaline went on, not sure I wanted her to.
I heard your daddy tell Mrs. Watson, Janie, you've done more than your share. Looking after Lily these past months, I don't know what we would have done without you.
Rosaline looked at me and shook her head.
I always wondered what he meant by that. When you told me what T-Ray said about your mother leaving you, I guess I knew then.
I can't believe you didn't tell me, I said, and folded my arms across my chest.
So how did you find out?
Rosaline asked. August told me, I said. I thought of all that crying I'd done in her bedroom, holding fistfuls of her dress in my hand, the monogram on her handkerchief, scratchy against my cheek.
August,
Rosaline repeated. You don't see Rosaline looking dumbfounded that often, but that's the look she had now. She knew my mother back when she was a little girl in Virginia, I explained. August helped raise her. I waited a few seconds, letting it soak in. This is where my mother came when she left. When Mrs. Watson took care of me, I said. She came right here to this house. Rosaline's eyes grew even narrower, if such a thing was possible.
Your mother,
she said, then stopped. I could see that her brain was struggling to fit it all together. My mother leaving, Mrs. Watson watching me. My mother returning only to get killed. My mother stayed here 3 months before she went back to Sylvan, I said. I guess one day it finally dawned on her. Oh, yeah, that's right. I've got a little girl at home. Gee, maybe I'll go back and get her now. I heard the bitter tone in my voice, and it came to me how I could lock that tone into my voice forever. From now on, every time I thought of my mother, I could so easy slip off into a cold place where meanness took over. I squeezed the shell and felt it dig into the pad of skin on my palm. Rosaline got to her feet. I looked at her, how large she was in the little bathroom. I stood up too, and for a second we were sandwiched together between the tub and the toilet, staring at each other. I wish you'd told me what you knew about my mother, I said. How come you didn't?
Oh, Lily, she said.
And there was gentleness in her words, like they'd been rocked in a little hammock of tenderness down in her throat.
Why would I go and hurt you with something like that?
Rosaline walked beside me to the honey house with a mop flung over her shoulder and a spatula in her hand. I carried a bucket of rags and the spick and span. We used the spatula to scrape honey off places you wouldn't believe. Some of it had gotten all the way over onto August's adding machine. We wiped off the floors and the walls, then went to work on our lady. We picked the place up and turned it back the way it was, and the entire time we didn't speak a word. I worked with heaviness inside, with my spirit emptied out. There was my breath curling in hard puffs from my nostrils. There was Rosaline's heart so full toward me it broke through into her sweating face. There was our lady, talking with her eyes, saying things I could not make out, and there was nothing else. The daughters and Otis arrived at noon, lugging in all manner of potluck dishes as if we hadn't eaten ourselves sick the night before. They tucked them into the oven to keep warm and stood around in the kitchen sneaking bites of Rosaline's corn fritters, saying they were the finest fritters they'd ever had the pleasure of eating, which caused Rosaline to swell up with pride. Y'all stop eating up all Rosaline's fritters, June said. They're for our lunch.
Oh, let 'em eat, said Rosaline,
which floored me, since she'd been known to smack my hand sideways for pinching a single crumb off her fritters before dinner. By the time Neil and Zack arrived, the fritters were nearly gone, and Rosaline was in danger of floating off into the atmosphere. I stood numb and plaster stiff in the corner of the kitchen. I wanted to crawl on my knees back to the honey house and ball up in the bed. I wanted everybody to shut up and go home. Zack started toward me, but I turned away and stared down the sink drain. From the corner of my eye, I grew aware of August watching me. Her mouth was bright and shiny, like she'd rubbed on Vaseline, so I knew she'd been dipping into the fritters, too. She walked over and touched her hand to my cheek. I didn't think August knew about me turning the honey house into a disaster zone, but she had a way of figuring things out. Maybe she was letting me know it was okay. I want you to tell Zack, I said, about me running away, about my mother, about everything. Don't you want to tell him yourself? My eyes started to fill up. I can't
please, you do it.
She glanced in his direction.
All right, then, I'll tell him the first chance I get.
She led the group outside for the last of the Merry Day ceremony. We paraded into the backyard, all the daughters with tiny smudges of grease clinging to their lips. June was out there waiting for us, sitting in an armless kitchen chair playing her cello. We gathered around her while the lights of noontime bore down. The music she played was the kind that sawed through you, cutting into the secret chambers of your heart and setting the sadness free. Listening to it, I could see my mother, sitting on a Trailways bus, riding out of Sylvan, while my 4-year-old self napped on the bed, not yet knowing what I would wake to. June's music turned into air, and the air into aching. I swayed on my feet and tried not to breathe it in. It was a relief when Neil and Zach stepped out of the honey house carrying Our Lady. It got my mind off the Trailways bus. They carried her under their arms like a tube of carpet, with the chain slapping back and forth against her body. You'd think they would use the wagon again, something a little more dignified than this. And if that wasn't bad enough, when they set her down, they deposited her in the middle of an anthill, which started an ant stampede. We had to jump around, shaking them off our feet. Sugar Girl's wig, which for some reason she insisted on calling a wig hat, had slid down toward her eyebrows from the jumping around, so we had to have time out for her to go inside and adjust it. Otis yelled after her, "I told you not to wear that thing. It's too hot for a wig. It's sliding around on your head from the perspiration." "If I want to wear my wig hat, I'm gonna wear it," she said over her shoulder. "Don't we know it?" he snapped back, looking at us like we were all on his side, when really we were back in Sugar Girl 100%. Not because we liked her wig. It was the worst-looking thing you ever saw. We just didn't like Otis giving her orders. When all that finally settled down, August said, "Well, here we are, and here's Our Lady." I looked her over, proud of how clean she was. August read Mary's words from the Bible. "For behold, from henceforth, all generations shall call me blessed." "Blessed Mary," Violet interrupted. "Blessed, blessed Mary." She stared at the sky, and we all looked up, wondering if she'd caught a glimpse of Mary climbing through the clouds. "Blessed Mary," she said one more time. "Today, we're celebrating the Assumption of Mary," August said. "We're celebrating how she woke from a sleep and rose into heaven. And we're here to remember the story of Our Lady of Chains, to remind ourselves that those chains could never keep her down. Our Lady broke free of them every time." August grabbed hold of the chain around Black Mary and unwrapped the loop before handing it off to Sugar Girl, who unwrapped it a little further. Every one of us got to join in taking off a loop of chain. What I remember is the clinking noise it made as it uncoiled in a pile at Mary's feet, the sound seeming to pick up where Violet left off. "Blessed, blessed, blessed, blessed." "Mary is rising," said August, her voice concentrated into a whisper. "She is rising to her heights." The daughters lifted their arms. Even Otis had his arms shot straight up in the air. "Our Mother Mary will not be cast down and bound up," said August, "and neither will her daughters. We will rise, daughters. We will rise." June sliced her bow across the cello strings. I wanted to lift my arms with the rest of them, to hear a voice coming to me out of the sky saying, "You will rise," to feel that it was possible. But they hung limp by my sides. Inside I felt small and contemptible, abandoned. Every time I closed my eyes, I still saw the Trailways bus. The daughters stayed with their arms reaching into the air, giving off the feeling they were rising with Mary. Then August picked up a jar of Black Madonna honey from behind June's chair, and what she did with it brought everybody back to earth. She opened the lid and turned it upside down over Our Lady's head. Honey oozed down Mary's face,
across her shoulders, sliding down the folds of her dress, a wedge of honeycomb stuck in the crook of Our Lady's elbow. I looked at Rosaline as if to say, "Well, great, we spent all that time cleaning honey off her, and here they go, putting it back on." I decided nothing these women did would ever surprise me again. But that lasted about 1 second, because next the daughters swarmed around Our Lady like a circle of bee attendants and rubbed the honey into the wood, working it into the top of her head, into her cheeks, her neck and shoulders and arms, across her breasts, her belly. "Come on, Lillian, help us," said Mabel Lee. Rosaline had already dived in and was coating honey all over Our Lady's thighs. I hung back, but Cressy took my hands and dragged me over to Mary, slapped them down in the muck of sun-warmed honey, right on top of Our Lady's red heart. I remembered how I'd visited Our Lady in the middle of the night, how I'd placed my hand on that same spot. "You are my mother," I'd told her then. "You are the mother of thousands." "I don't get why we're doing this," I said. "We always bathe her in honey," said Cressy, "every year." "But how come?" August was working the honey into Our Lady's face. "The churches used to bathe their special statues in holy water as a way to honor them," she said. "Especially statues of Our Lady. Sometimes they bathed her in wine. We settled on honey." August moved down to Our Lady's neck. "See, Lily, honey is a preservative. It seals over the comb in the hives to keep it safe and pure so the bees can survive the winter. When we bathe Our Lady in it, I guess you'd say we're preserving her for another year. At least inside our hearts we're doing that." "I didn't know honey was a preservative," I said, starting to like the feel of it under my fingers, how they glided as if oiled. "Well, people don't think about honey like that, but it's so strong-acting, people used to smear it on dead bodies to embalm them. Mothers buried their dead babies in it, and it would keep them fresh." This was a use for honey I hadn't considered. I could just see funeral homes selling big jars of honey for dead people instead of coffins. I tried to picture that in the drive-through window at the funeral home. I began to work my hands into the wood, almost embarrassed at the intimacy of what we were doing. Once Mabel Lee leaned her head over too far and got honey all in her hair, but it was Lunel who took the cake with honey dripping off the ends of her elbows. She kept trying to lick it off, but of course her tongue couldn't reach that far. The ants started a single-file parade up the side of Our Lady, drawn by the honey, and not to be outdone, a handful of scout bees showed up and landed on Our Lady's head. Let somebody bring out the honey, and the insect kingdom will be there in no time. Queenie said, "Next, I guess the honey bears will be joining us." I actually laughed, and spotting a honey-free place near the base of the statue, worked to get it covered up. Our Lady was covered with hands, every shade of brown and black, going in their own directions. But then the strangest thing started happening. Gradually, all our hands fell into the same movement, sliding up and down the statue in long, slow strokes, then changing to a sideways motion, like a flock of birds that shifts direction in the sky at the same moment. And you're left wondering who gave the order. This went on for I don't know how long, and we didn't ruin it by talking. We were preserving Our Lady, and I was content, for the first time since I'd learned about my mother, to be doing what I was doing. Finally, we all stepped back. Our Lady stood there with her chain spilled around her on the grass, absolutely golden with honey. One by one, the daughters dipped their hands into a bucket of water and washed off the honey. I waited till the very last, wanting to keep the coating of honey on my skin as long as I could. It was like I was wearing a pair of gloves with magic properties, like I could preserve whatever I touched. We left Our Lady in the yard while we ate, then returned and washed her with water the same slow way we'd washed her with honey. After Neil and Zach carried her back to her place in the parlor, everyone left. August, June, and Rosaline started doing the dishes, but I slipped off to the honey house. I lay down on my cot, trying not to think. Have you noticed the more you try not to think,
the more elaborate your thinking episodes get? While trying not to think, I spent 20 minutes on this fascinating question. If you could have one miracle from the Bible happen to you, what would it be? I eliminated the one about multiplying loaves and fishes, as I never wanted to see food again. I thought walking on water would be interesting, but what good was that? I mean, you walk on water, what's the point? I settled on getting raised from the dead, since a big part of me still felt dead as a doornail. All this took place before I even realized I was thinking. I had just gone back to trying again not to think when August tapped on the door. Lily, can I come in? Sure, I said, but I didn't bother to get up. So much for not thinking. Try to be 5 seconds around August and not think. She breezed in holding a gold and white striped hat box. She stood a moment, looking down at me, seeming unusually tall. The fan on the little wall shelf rotated around and blew her collar, making it flap around her neck. She has brought me a hat, I thought. Maybe she had gone down to the Amen Dollar and bought me a straw hat to cheer me up. But that didn't make a bit of sense, really. Why would a straw hat cheer me up? Then I thought for 1 second it might be the hat Lunel had promised to make for me, but that didn't fit either. Lunel wouldn't have had time to sew up a hat this soon. August sat on Rosaline's old cot and placed the box on her lap. I've brought you some of your mother's belongings. I stared at the perfect roundness of the box. When I took a deep breath, it stuttered strangely as it came out. My mother's belongings. I didn't move. I smelled the air coming through the window, churned up by the fan. I could tell it had turned thick with afternoon rain, but the sky was holding back. Don't you want to see? She said. Just tell me what's in it. She placed her hand on the lid and patted. I'm not sure I can remember. I didn't even remember the box till this morning. I thought we'd open it together. But you don't have to look if you don't want to. It's just a handful of things your mother left here the day she went back to Sylvan to get you. I finally gave her clothes away to the Salvation Army, but I kept the rest of her stuff, what little there was. It's been in this box 10 years, I guess. I sat up. I could hear my heart thudding. I wondered if August could hear it over there across the room. Boom, 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 boom. In spite of the panic that goes along with it, there's something familiar and strangely comforting about hearing your heart beat like that. August set the box on the bed and removed the lid. I stretched up a little to see inside the box, unable to glimpse anything, though, but white tissue paper turning yellow around the edges. She lifted out a small bundle and peeled away the tissue. Your mother's pocket mirror, she said, holding it up. It was oval-shaped and surrounded by a tortoise frame, no bigger than the palm of my hand. I eased off the bed and slid down onto the floor, where I rested my back against the bed, a little closer than before. August acted like she was waiting for me to reach out and take the mirror. I practically had to sit on my hands. Finally, August lifted it up and peered inside it herself. Circles of light bounced around on the wall behind her. If you look in here, you're going to see your mother's face looking back at you, she said. I will never look in that mirror, I thought. Laying it on the bed, August reached into the hat box and unwrapped a hairbrush with a wooden handle and offered it to me. Before I thought, I took it. The handle felt funny in my hand, cool and smooth-edged, like it had been worn down by excessive holding. I wondered if she'd brushed her hair 100 strokes every day. As I was about to hand the brush back to August, I saw a long, black, wavy hair threaded through the bristles. I brought the brush close to my face and stared at it. My mother's hair, a genuine part of her body. Well, I'll be, August said. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
It had grown out of her head, and now perched there like a thought she had left behind on the brush. I knew then that no matter how hard you tried, no matter how many jars of honey you threw, no matter how much you thought you could leave your mother behind, she would never disappear from the tender places in you. I pressed my back against the bed and felt tears coming. The brush and the hair belonging to Deborah Fontenelle Owens swam in my vision. I handed the brush back to August, who dropped a piece of jewelry in my hand. A gold pin shaped like a whale with a tiny black eye and a spout of rhinestone water coming from its blowhole. She was wearing that pin on a sweater the day she got here, August said. I closed my fingers around it, then walked on my knees over to Rosaline's bed and placed it alongside the pocket mirror and the brush, moving them around like I was working on a collage. I used to lay out my Christmas presents on the bed the same way. There would usually be four whole things that T-Ray had gotten the lady at the Sylvan Mercantile to pick out for me. Sweater, socks, pajamas, sack of oranges. Merry Christmas. You could bet your life on the gift list. I would arrange them for display in a vertical line, a square, a diagonal line, any kind of configuration to help me feel like they were a picture of love. When I looked up at August, she was pulling a black book from the box. I gave your mother this while she was here. English poetry. I took the book in my hand, leafing through the pages, noticing pencil marks in the margins. Not words, but strange little doodles. Spiraling tornadoes, a flock of V's, squiggles with eyes, pots with lids, pots with faces, pots with curly things boiling out, little puddles that would suddenly give rise to a terrible wave. I was staring at my mother's private miseries, and it made me want to go outside and bury the book in the dirt. Page 42. That's where I came to 8 lines by William Blake, that she'd underlined, some words twice. O Rose, thou art sick. The invisible worm that flies in the night, in the howling storm, has found out thy bed of crimson joy, and his dark secret love does thy life destroy. I closed the book. I wanted the words to flow off me. But they had stuck. My mother was William Blake's Rose. I wanted nothing so much as to tell her how sorry I was for being one of the invisible worms that flew in the night. I placed the book on the bed with the other things, then turned back to August, while she reached down into the box again, causing the tissue paper to whisper. One last thing, she said, and she drew out a small oval picture frame of tarnished silver. When she passed it to me, she held on to my hands for a second. The frame contained a picture of a woman in profile, her head bent toward a little girl who sat in a high chair with a smudge of baby food on the side of her mouth. The woman's hair curled in 40 directions, beautiful, like it had just had its 100 strokes. She held a baby spoon in her right hand. Light glazed her face. The little girl wore a bib with a teddy bear on it. A sprig of hair on top of her head was tied with a bow. She lifted one hand toward the woman. Me and my mother. I didn't care about anything on this earth except the way her face was tipped toward mine, our noses just touching, how wide and gorgeous her smile was, like sparklers going off. She had fed me with a tiny spoon. She had rubbed her nose against mine and poured her light on my face. Through the open window, the air smelled like Carolina jasmine, which is the true smell of South Carolina. I walked over and propped my elbows on the sill and breathed as deeply as I could. Behind me, I heard August shift on the cot, the legs squeak, then relax. I looked down at the picture. Then closed my eyes. I figured May must have made it to heaven,
and explained to my mother about the sign I wanted. The one that would let me know I was loved.